Movie Queers, where personal stories are embedded in film history. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second episode of Movie Queers, the monthly podcast where LGBTQ older adults talk about their favorite movie and much more. This is Mateo Sancho Cardiel, and first things first, this podcast is done thanks to the Hostos Community College Initiative Adelante, and with the technical and visual assistance of Jeb Thompson. If you listened to the first episode, you may remember how we traveled together to Tiger Bay in Cardiff. There, the story of a little girl fascinated by a murderer took us to Paul and the story of his family. Today, we are about to start a completely different journey.
Do you know where you're going to? Do you like the things that life is showing you?
Some of you may know the song. Of course, most of you may know Diana Ross. But do you know what film included the song?
Diana Ross stars with Billy Dee Williams and Anthony Perkins in this rags-to-riches story of a model torn between love and success in the fashion world.
Making clothes for rich people to look at in a magazine? You think any of this crap means anything to these people around here?
It means something to me.
Fame will bring her heartbreak and tragedy, but won't stop the pursuit of her dream. Diana Ross is Mahogany.
Mahogany is a blaxploitation movie from 1974 directed by Berry Gordy Jr., the founder of the iconic music label Motown. It tells the story of Tracy Chambers, a beautiful girl from Chicago that wants to become a successful fashion designer. It was another stellar role for the music diva Diana Ross, forming a dreamy couple with Billy Dee Williams and also including Anthony Perkins as a sexually ambiguous and very poisonous character that will represent the sweets and sours of Tracy's success.
What are you, Miss Chambers, an underachiever?
No, I'm an achiever, all right. It's just that I'd rather do it by making clothes, not by wearing them.
Did you make that?
Yes, I did. Me and my tailoring department right here.
Well, I'm impressed.
Thank you.
You've impressed me.
Thank you.
What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to sell it. This and a whole collection more.
In Chicago?
What's wrong with Chicago?
Nothing. Nothing the trip to Europe wouldn't cure.
This is a long way from Europe.
In the way Mahogany challenges the expectations that society had for a black woman in the 70s, this movie also sparked a dream in the life of Raymond, back then a teenager in Indiana.
First time I saw it in the theater, that was the only way to see movies back then. There were no DVDs or anything like that. You couldn't go even to Blockbuster. Like in 1975, you had to go to the theater. And I went every weekend with my best friend and we saw a different movie. And this was the movie that weekend and it definitely affected me. It changed my life. It was a treat because it was like an escape. So every weekend was an escape. And I think that's what movies are for everybody. It's an escape from your everyday life. I saw this movie when I was 15 years old. I was very young. And I'd never seen a black person in a movie do anything that was elegant or glamorous or productive. So it was really groundbreaking for me.
I've been around and I can see there's a much better life than this. And I want it. Don't you?
Of course I do, Tracy. And I can understand your wanting this clip. But most of these people don't stand a chance in hell of going with you. Somebody's got to stay and do the marching and the politicking and the fighting to make this a better place to live.
That was not her dream. That was her boyfriend's dream. Billy Dee Williams played her boyfriend in the movie, and his dream was to help people and to uplift the community. Her dream was to get the hell out of there, which really aligned with my dream, you know, because I grew up very poor. You know, I was living in Indiana at the time when I was 15, but I was actually born in Alabama. So I was born during segregation, and black people and white people lived separately, and black people lived very poorly, you know, in a separate, like, neighborhood. So I grew up there until I was, like, six, and then I moved to Indiana to live with my parents. And we were always, you know, tight with money, so there weren't many opportunities for, you know, new clothes and things like that.
Something's happening down here. Something's happening everywhere. The couple of years back, it looked like things were going to change. But not only just for black people, but for everybody in the world that's been ripped off, pushed around, or just born unlucky. Something's gone. Something, some kind of feeling for each other.
I mean, Indiana's not very progressive, so people were racist there. It was very difficult to grow up there being a minority, especially in the situations where I was usually the only black person in my class, sometimes the only black person in my school besides my little brother. You know, it was, I don't want to say hostile, but it was a bit of a hostile environment to grow up in. But you kind of get used to your situation, and I was kind of used to that. So seeing this movie and seeing that there's a place like Europe, and I thought, oh, I'll go there and people won't be mean to me. You know, of course, that's not always true, but it was better. You know, eventually I did get to go to Rome and Paris and everywhere. I've been everywhere. I've traveled a lot, you know. So the world is a lot more multicultural, which I didn't know. We had no other cultures besides black and white, you know, in Indiana, as far as I knew. And I think it was just exposure. All the movies that I've seen have given me exposure to, like, other worlds.
Because in Rome, Miss Chambers, they don't send their pretty things out to get coffee.
She don't know nothing about no Rome.
I know it. They'd like that best of all.
What do you mean by that?
I don't know. Your glow. Your innocence. Rome is like a rich old lady. She covers her wrinkles up with things that shine.
So I'd say a lot of the ideas in the movie that she experienced when she went to Europe and how she was treated are realistic, and I felt that too. But I still think that the concept that a person can do something and follow their dream still stands out to me as, like, the key. You know, the ending, I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but the ending is a little bit anticlimactic for me because I feel that she made a choice, you know, based on somebody else's life or based on the way women were treated back in the 70s. That wouldn't be a choice now. I mean, she would have done something totally different.
Let me tell you something, and don't you ever forget it. Success is nothing without someone you love to share it with.
I think when I was young and I saw it the first time, I didn't care. When I saw it when I was older, like in my 30s, I related a lot more to it because I'd experienced a lot more of that, like, success can be poisonous thing. But at the same time, I thought I have to be successful because I don't really have a choice. You know, like, I'm not gonna not try. And I think that now that I am successful, I think that they're relatively successful, I should say. There's a choice where when you don't get what you want and you mm-hmm. suffer, but then when you get what you want, you still suffer mm-hmm. on a different level. And the more things go well, the more pressure there is for things to get better. Mm-hmm. And that part is exhausting. I was thinking the other day that I wish that somebody would just say, you've done a great job and you can rest now. Like, movies like to make you think you have to make a decision. It's here and now, just like romantic comedies. You have to go to the airport at the last minute. Otherwise, you're never going to see that person again. We could just text them, like, the next day and say, hey, I changed my mind. I like you. You know, but in the movies, it's always like that. It's always like an all or nothing kind of thing. But life is not all or nothing.
If you ever become Tracy James again, you'll know where I'll be.
Go on, get out of here with your goddamn philosophies and your judgments. Who the hell do you think you are? You're a loser, Brian. You ain't shit. And I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. You're a goddamn loser.
I think that in my life, I did make a choice about career, and I pushed my career a lot, and I feel that my love life has suffered for that. But I think it's just because I am such a workaholic. I think it's possible to have both a relationship and have a successful career. But I think that for me, it hasn't necessarily been true because every time my career gets better, my relationships go down. But, you know, so maybe there's a little bit of truth in it, but I do think it's possible to have both. And I have seen other movies that made me think, you know, choices have to be made. One of my favorite movies is Remains of the Day, which I don't know if you've heard of it.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I read that book. I remember there's a blackout in the 90s in New York. And there's no power. I read the book in one night And I was like, God, this is such a good book. And then they made a movie. I went to see the movie and I was blown away by it. You know, Emma Thompson and Anthony Hopkins, and just a choice about like not ever saying anything. Cause I feel I related to that butler character so much, where you don't speak up when you have a chance, you don't say anything, and then you miss your opportunity. You know, it's like so sad. And I was determined. I remember when I walked out of the theater, I was like, my life won't be like that, you know? So it influenced me a lot.
Brian, I'm from down here too. Are you forgetting that?
I'm just wondering if maybe you are.
One thing I can't forget, and that's how many times I've been told what I can't do, where I can't go, and why I can't be different from anybody else. Because that's all I've had to keep track of all my life from everybody. And I'm hoping that just this once I can forget that I heard it coming from you.
In the 70s, the only way black people seemed to be able to get a movie made is to agree to the terms that the white studios wanted, and they wanted to see black people in certain situations. I mean, if you talk about blaxploitation, there's a scene in the movie where Anthony Perkins is doing a photo shoot in this like shack, and he's staging all these black people on the stairs and stuff. That's blaxploitation. He was literally exploiting them, and Billy Dee Williams just said, how much is that old woman getting paid? She wasn't getting paid at all. And the models were getting $60 an hour, which doesn't sound like a lot of money, but that was probably equivalent to like $400 an hour now.
How much are you going to give the old lady?
I don't know, but that's not the point. This is fashion stuff, not politics.
Everything's politics, honey.
Maybe to you, Brian, but not to me.
Black people wanted to see themselves in the film, and I don't think we care that we're being exploited because we're finally being featured. And there was a black star, a beautiful woman, a handsome man, they fall in love. That's what people cared about. And it was exploitive of black people, except that there was nothing else. There was nothing else to see. I mean, if you go back to like Birth of a Nation or Gone with the Wind, they exploited black people in the most ridiculous ways. I mean, this is a different kind of exploitation, and it was blaxploitation, but there was nobody else making movies. Even though Berry Gordy made this movie, he made it with a very, like, narrow lens.
No, there's only one word that describes rich, dark, beautiful, and rare. I'm gonna call you Mahogany.
Mahogany?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I like it.
Well, you'll be the only one that doesn't by the time I'm through. Providing I can get that frigging agency to back you.
That's so funny. I modeled one time when I was like 19 and then never again. Now, I think that, I think for men it's different because she was being objectified. Clearly she was beautiful. So they're like, hey, you can model. You're a black person. We don't have any black people models. So that was a good storyline for the movie. I think for guys, you need to be smart. And I think for me, I had to be really smart. I had to be smarter than all the white people in my class to prove that I was just okay to be considered to be just normal.
I know you haven't seen them before, but they're called dolman sleeves.
Dolman sleeve? What the hell is a dolman sleeve?
Mister, what's your name? If you ever get in the fashion business, be sure and give me a call, okay?
But I did well in school. And proving that I was smart first made a big difference. And then I could do whatever I wanted once I got to college because my parents didn't care what I did. One bit what I did, they thought that college was a bad idea because they didn't know what it was. I realize now as an adult it wasn't their fault because they grew up in the era of Jim Crow. You may not know what that is, but they made laws that black people couldn't do certain things. And my parents grew up at that time, so they both, neither one of them finished school. They both left school at 14 and 16. So they had no idea how important education was because they'd never had it. And their parents had even less. So I think that they didn't get it. They didn't get why I wanted to stay and do more school. After high school, I wanted to go to college and stuff. So they didn't pay for it. I got scholarships and I did it myself.
It's hard to feel for each other when you can barely keep yourself up.
Up or out? That's what you really want to do, isn't it? Get out.
Out of here? You're damn right I do. And I'm gonna do it too. Is there anything wrong with that?
I did. I think since I was 8 years old, I always knew I was gonna live in New York. I remember my best friend that I mentioned earlier, he brought a book to school and it had skyscrapers and we were looking at it and I said, you know, we should go there. I remember when I was 8, I said that and he's like, yeah, let's do it. And we did. We moved to New York as soon as he moved here at 23 and I was here at 21, you know. And we still live here. We're best friends. We don't see each other as much. He's married, you know, so I don't see him as much. But we talk basically every day. We text. You know, we were very, very close for a long time, but, you know, life, you get really busy, and I work a lot, you know. I moved to New York 5 days after I graduated from college. So, yeah, in 1982, I graduated, and I moved to New York, and I never went home. It was difficult. I came here only at $400. It was really difficult, and I stayed in a hotel. I thought, you know, I was really popular at school, and I did, you know, really well with design and stuff, and I thought I'd get a job really easily. But when I came here, I'm competing with everybody from Ivy League schools, which I wasn't really aware it was going to be like that. So it took me a while to figure it out, you know. But I finally figured it out, and I decided, you know, that I should start my own company. I thought it was the best way because nobody would ever, people would hire me, but they never let me move up.
Well, you've got an eye. I'll say that for you.
But you can't use them.
Not really. I'll tell you what. My secretary just quit. Can you take shorthand?
And I think that there's a bit of racism in that, but also a bit of, I think at the time I thought I knew everything, but I had a lack of experience because I hadn't had any, like, really specific jobs. I'd been working since I was 14, but I hadn't had jobs in design. I hadn't interned with anybody. So I started my own company, and it worked out for me. You know, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for sure, but it did work out.
And there's one other thing that I don't have. But if I get around to a little cosmetic alteration, I'll be sure and bring it over for each and every one of you to kiss it. Good day, gentlemen.
Oh, God. It's a lot better. It's a lot better, especially for black people. Things are not fair, and I still experience a lot of racism, but it's more like, it's more subtle. And it's also more done by people who don't realize that they're being racist. They don't realize what they're doing. Before, it was blatant. People were like, I hate you, you're a black person. You know, like, they would just say it. But it's not like that now. People now just have certain social biases against certain people because they made up their mind what they're capable of. And I feel that I'm an exception because we've been given a lot of opportunities. Like, most of my clients are white. So there are people that are thinking, hey, you know, this guy can do this. You know, they're trusting me with millions of dollars. And so it empowers me to believe that I can do more. And I think that I wish that everybody got these opportunities because I think it's what's necessary. I think that you have to give people an opportunity to succeed, you know, if you ever want the world to get better.
Do you get what you're hoping for? When you look behind you, there's no open doors.
But I like movies that have an aspirational quality to them. I love the movie The Talented Mr. Ripley. I think that that movie epitomizes more like my lifestyle now. You know, I like that he was trying to be something that he wasn't. And I think that was me for a long time. I was growing into my own personality, kind of reinventing myself.
Without killing people.
Without killing people. I haven't killed that many people. Not on purpose. But yeah, without killing people. And also the fashion, the style in the movie, I think that for me, life has to always be very stylish. It's just something that comes with my territory. And I think that New York encourages that because, you know, it's a very visual city. It's almost like you're on TV every time you walk outside. So I'd say Ripley is probably one of those movies that really stands out to me.
Tell me, Brian, how would you go about making this party better? We all do so want to show you a good time, you know.
Well, you might start by sticking labels on all your guests when they come through the door. It might be easy to tell who was what.
Brian, people aren't into labels here.
I think I am myself, but I think that I am playing a role. It's almost like Holly Golightly said that she was a phony, but she was a real phony. You know, but she was always playing a role, but it was something that she started doing so long ago that she doesn't remember who she used to be. But I think that I've always been this person, even when I was younger, and that I have always had such high expectations for myself and high expectations for other people that I've always been, like, moving towards more. Like, not necessarily more materially, but, like, more, like, growth.
God, she's magnificent. Mm. She's been on every cover in New York.
I think one thing that people don't understand about fashion is they think it's very shallow, but it's actually the opposite. It's the way that you communicate to other people who you are. And I think that that's really personal. And I think it can be really profound sometimes. I don't regret anything because I've been on a journey since I was like 15 and I saw this. I saw this film. I've been on a journey to try to prove something to myself that I could do something special. And I think that I've proven that, and I don't regret it. But I do realize that wherever you go, you take yourself with you. So as much as I change, you know, and evolve as a person, I am still really the same scared little kid. I really am, and I'm still wanting acceptance and approval.
And this is where our journey ends today. I hope you learned a little bit more about this movie, Mahogany, but also that you enjoyed learning more from Raymond. Let's keep listening to our older adults and let's keep watching movies. Thank you for listening, and more to come in a month.